listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and welcome to another exciting episode of our show today. As you can tell, we have a special guest with us. And so we're going to get to know our special guest and a little bit about his experience and his coaching practice. And I know some of you folks that are looking for a coach might be interested, and also some of you that are new in developing your coaching practice will be interested as well. So we always like to track people, their story, and how they got to where they're at. So without further ado, welcome to Brent Elam. Brent, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Bruce. I sound all right?
Yeah, you sound great, man.
Okay.
Sound great, man. Got that Zen look back there with all that purple and stuff.
I got my plants and everything getting lights. So.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, looking good, man. Looking good. So I guess kind of start, you know, you have a very... I think a really unique background from growing up in California and in your industry position and now where you're at. So kind of give us a walkthrough of who you are as a person and then kind of how that melds into the coaching.
Okay. We'll just start from the beginning. Like Bruce said, I am from California. I was born in the Los Angeles area back in the 70s. Moved to Texas, you know, in 2006, and you know, there's lots of my teenage years and all that in California. Like I said, 2006 moved here. I worked for a I won't say the name, but I worked for a large class one railroad. I've worked for them for 25 years, and that brought me into coaching fairly, you know, I could say, dealing with people on that level as opposed to, you know, not as opposed to, but being in management, it's a lot more preferred and structured as to coach someone through their job. And that's how I was introduced to it and trained on it every year and things like that. So during that time, in 2014, I came to the realization that I had a slight problem with alcohol, pretty bad problem. I guess you could say that was the first step. I went to rehab in Tennessee and got to meet a lot of other addicts and really had a abrupt change, mental, spiritual, all that change. And so I've been sober now for 10 years, 1 month, and I think like 5 days.
Awesome, bro.
And now, you know, as it being with having that much time in sobriety, I've had the opportunity to coach people, not get them well or get them sober, but coach them through the process of how I did it and how they can do it. And so I've had several years of experience doing that as well, not just the executive side of coaching, but also the addiction side of coaching.
Right.
So, and you'll have to excuse me, this whole format being on camera is throwing me off.
It's okay, man.
I'll go ahead and apologize now.
You're doing good.
And I'm sorry everyone has to look at this, but this is
you know, it's part of the package, baby. So here's the thing. Yeah. So sounds like you got a couple things. You worked for a very large employer, very, very large employer. That exposed you to a lot of different staff on a lot of different levels, coworkers, staff, all that.
Correct.
I can only imagine a crap ton of training for said job, you know.
And some of the best training you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Hands down. And that is correct as well. So, and then because of your, and then part of your, you know, part of your journey is a recovery journey. And I think, you know, I think people will also resonate with that side of you. You know what I mean? So the recovery journey, I think that, sober coaching, sober companion, or just coaching somebody, you know, as they're going through their sobriety, you know, and I've been doing this since 2016 for the coaching.
Right.
That's unbelievable. Coming up on 9 years. it seems like a lifetime. But I used to get a lot of shit from people. Well, you know, you're just a paid sponsor or whatever. Like, that's not it. That's not coaching, right?
Right.
So somebody, how would you characterize what you do with a coaching client as they're going through their recovery versus a sponsor and what they do, right? If you want to tackle that.
As a coach, I feel like I'm more invested in the person than as opposed to a sponsor. A sponsor can back out at any time. Trust me, I've had a few, and I know they can back out at any time. They don't want to do it anymore. By taking on someone as a coach, you know, there's contractual investments, there's financial investments, there's, you know, so everybody's buying into it, but the coach is, and I feel this for me in this way that, yeah, I'm more of a obligated party to coaching someone through sobriety than actually just sponsoring them.
I love that distinction. Nobody's ever said that. I mean, and that is absolutely true, right? There's a phone list or sponsor list. Sponsors come and go. I mean, some are more invested than others, but at the end of the day, there's no contract. There's no some sort of a...
No, there's no accountability as a sponsor.
Or some sort of a tradition that says the sponsor shall, yada, yada. Nope. That, you know, it's kind of a free-form deal. So I like that. And as we talk about in coaching, that first contract is usually a 3-month contract. Because we all want to make sure that everybody has skin in the game, right?
I mean, right.
Hey, I'm going to give you 100% or more. And then, you know, we're hoping that our clients, you know, do the same on mutually agreed upon goals and those things. So,
and that's the way I kind of try to approach it is I have to approach it. I started coaching from a business standpoint. And so I have to approach it that way, even though it is sobriety and you're looking for a change in this person's life and you are going to have to approach that from a business standpoint of, you know, that kind of relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, it is what it is. And it makes the boundary clear. First of all, it makes the boundary pretty clear. Number two, it makes it a professional relationship.
Right.
You know, it because you're taking money or receiving money or whatever, remuneration for your time and service, it's now a professional relationship. And it's kind of, and I think that elevates the whole dynamic. And so, that's another distinction, right? Between the sponsor, that this is a professional relationship that likes,
has absolutely
commitment and stuff like that. So let me, and again, I'm not trying, this isn't like a Senate confirmation hearing or anything, but
sure.
The question.
Good. There's too much dirt out there.
Some coaches, some, not all. Okay. So kind of hear me out on this one. Some coaches, sure, but not all. Some coaches that are kind of born out of the 12-step that's where they came from. That's where they got, they went to rehab, they got the recovery there, they went to meeting. I mean, you know, they did the whole deal, or doing the whole deal, you know. Some of those folks, when they go into coaching, some of those folks have more of their own agenda that's going into the coaching versus what we're taught in coaching school, right, is like good coaches ask good questions and, you know, a little bit more that right. positive psychology, right? Remember all that? That positive, oh, yeah. Hey, you know, really partnering, you know, and working toward some mutual goals. So did that make sense at all about the agenda?
Yeah, I understand okay. completely what you're saying.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? Let's hear about, what's your take on that?
I don't come into it with an agenda because I don't really have one. And you know, from talking to me, I dropped out of AA a long time ago. While I do embrace the 12 steps and think that is a very good place to begin and to go back to, right. you know, to visit, it's not the end all be all of how someone gets sober. So there are many different ways. And then, and actually that person, approaching sobriety or pursuing it might not even have to be a sober person. They might right. be able to control their drinking after a little while.
Right.
And that's, you know, me as being someone who can't drink, I don't have an agenda to make everybody stop.
Right.
You know, it's not, it's everything is catered to the individual. It has to be. I can't blanket everything. Everybody's different.
Amen, man. Amen. And you'd think that'd be obvious, right? You'd think that would be obvious, but it's not. You know, there's guys that go in there guns blazing as if they just turn the coffee pot on, put out the cigarette. All right, what you need to do is a four-step rigorous program, rigorous honesty, and hit the bumper stickers, expect a miracle. You know what I mean? And man, they're just bums rushing the client. Some of these clients are like, whoa. You know what I'm saying? Like I can get this for free, you know, or whatever.
Right.
Go down the street. I go to the 24-hour club and get this or whatever, you know, and get this. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's not, it doesn't, like you said, fit a coaching paradigm. Right. And so.
Correct.
I'm glad that was a very veiled way for me to get some. Anyway, I'm glad
that's good. About your history. You're gonna have to drag it out of me.
No, I'm glad you said that because I think people, you know, I think your clients would want to know that, like, hey, right, my journey started here, spent a time here. However, now I'm, you know, I know that there's different paths, right, toward recovery, toward personal betterment, etc. Like you said, you know, some people, not all, some people can do controlled social drinking, not all of them. You know, and I think I've told you and I've said on the show before where I do it in the coaching contract that if they failed in this kind of way that they would then have to go to IOP or some sort of treatment because at that there's a point where somebody's substance use issue is bigger than my coaching ability. Or way bigger, right?
Totally.
Or bigger than our relationship. Like you've got to go somewhere and address that and see where that takes you.
And I totally see that. Coaching would not have helped me in my first,
right?
Being my first thing. I would have failed that miserably, I'm sure. I personally needed rehab. I needed to go to a place to think and I needed that.
Okay.
Now, some people, coaching will be great for them right out of the box. But me personally, I could see it. That wouldn't have helped me.
So did that
help? Then that comes down to the individual. So
No, totally understood. But again, talking about your experience, which nobody can take away, which is great. Did you feel like the rehab helped you come to the end of yourself to then change? Or were you just kind of like, oh man, as soon as you checked in first day, like I'm changing, like I'm, you know what I'm saying? Or
I actually, the first day I was broken.
Right.
And I realized it.
That didn't take away from the rehab experience, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, it didn't take away from the rehab. It actually made it better because I saw people that resisted and things right. like that. To actually go in there with an open mind and to kind of say, okay, I'm going to take what I can from this, actually is what helped me quite a bit. And I think having that coaching background that I did allowed me to accept a lot of what was being given to me.
How did it make it more acceptable?
Well, because I didn't feel like I was being told to do something and I didn't have any stake in it. So they actually allowed us to make decisions on our own, which is a big thing with coaching. I'm not making decisions. I'm getting that buyback and that commitment from that person. And that's what they did when I was in rehab. And I recognized that while I was in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a special rehab that was able to walk a line like that.
Well, I think if you're more willing to accept what they were offering, and you have to remember that this rehab was bought and funded by the exact companies the industry I worked for. So they knew
it was tailor-made for people in your field.
Tailor-made for transportation people. So we'll say that.
Yeah. No.
And we're a very hard-headed group.
For sure. For sure.
But I mean, there was probably about a week or so in there where there were things I was told that I had to comply with, that I had to do.
Right.
But as that went on, we were given more choice and we were given, you could see that what they were telling us was something we had to work on. It wasn't I'll tell you this and then you're fixed.
Okay. Just because, right. Just
yes.
The
yes.
Total line because it's part of the program and that's
right. They let you know,
right.
You're going to have to work on this. You're going to have to do that. And I, like I said, I recognized that form that they were giving to us. And I think that allowed me to accept it more just because it was something I recognized.
Right. Right. And so I think you having gone through that experience, right, as well as all the training and experiences you had in the company, as it were, and then where you are now, that has kind of uniquely prepared you to be the coach that you are today, because you've traveled a path of recovery, been exposed to different methodologies, but have kind of landed on something that, like you said, see, it works for you. And some of those techniques can certainly probably work for your clients.
Right. And I see that you have to, and I don't know how it is for you, but you have to, each person you bring in, you have to individually kind of see where they're at.
All right.
Kind of get a grasp of which direction they're going to go by asking those questions and just letting them kind of lead you down a path.
Right. I mean, exactly. Exactly. Now, that's not to say that sometimes we have coaching clients that have an existing issue with their marriage or relationship, with their work, some sort of other problem or addiction or some of it, maybe perhaps even a behavioral issue, you know.
Right.
And so that kind of helps take the focus of some of the initial coaching planning, if you will, but still at the end of the day, it's those coaching techniques that kind of prevail as you kind of walk through that relationship. I'm going to ask another veiled question.
Okay.
There may be people out there that were, you always talk about peers, but okay, part of the substance recovery, right? People, places, and things, and peer relations. Some people had like a peer group, man, that they were in, and then sometimes they got a leap.
I see where you're going.
Okay, man. Go ahead.
So for me, when I did it, and this is how anybody I've coached, this is how it's been. I don't ask them or tell them or even try to get them to the conclusion that they have to cut anyone out. Or do they have to cut out any activities? I mean, I was in a motorcycle club for almost as from hang around prospect all the way through to when I got out, almost 7 years of my 10 years of sobriety. And it was not a sober club. And, you know, as prospects, we tended bar, we did all that stuff. We hung out at bars. We went to all the places that AA will tell you, oh, you're not supposed to go. But I don't think the dropping of all your people or all of your things that you do, or I don't think, unless it's just totally destructive, I don't think it has any bearing on whether a person is going to get sober or not, personally. And that's the way it worked for me. If it's not in you to get sober, no amount of getting away from the problem or getting away from the people is going to help.
Wow. I mean, yeah.
I mean, that might be totally contrary to everything people know.
No. I mean, I love it, man. I love it, right? Because it's not.
Well, life is going to continue. You can't, you can't get on the sidelines of life. You have to keep going. And the only way to keep going is to just stay in the race, stay with it. But you're choosing different paths through the same life.
So, and I love this, man, because it, not because I'm a contrarian or whatever, but right. So here you are. In your recovery, mm-hmm. in a position because of social commitment, if you will, at the time.
Right.
You're in bars and you're tending bar and you're staying off alcohol.
Right.
And so, right. So a lot of people, like any sponsor, would be like, are you smoking crack? Get it. What the, you know.
Yeah.
Was it? How was that experience? Did you white knuckle it at first, or you just had?
No, I didn't white knuckle it at all. I walked in and I stated my intentions of what I wanted to do. So I wanted to be a part of this club. I wanted to go through the process of becoming a part of this club, but I'm in recovery, so I'm not going to drink. Right. I'm not going to do anything, but I will still be right beside you the whole time. Tending bar, riding with you, going to bars, going, hanging around, you know, the seedy underbelly of society.
Right.
You know, that's just the way it was. And it didn't, because I had already rooted as to how I was going to tackle these situations. It wasn't a fight.
Right.
It wasn't white knuckling it or anything.
Right. I think there's another story in that, and you and I've never talked about that. I mean, we've never. This is all pioneer stuff that we're doing right now. But I like the fact, or I admire the fact. I don't even know what the words to say is that there. So that situation, as a prospect, and that's a very levels to salvation type of thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you got to work your way through, and then you had all that time and commitment into that, and then at some point you're not into that, you're out of
right.
there. Can you talk about that process of like the limits and the boundaries that you set, and then finally, you know, you had to, it's almost like coming to the end of yourself again, but in a right flip way, maybe, like you're coming to the end of that situation, rather, you know,
coming to the end of being in a club.
Yeah.
Or
like I'm thinking that would not be an easy thing to just like, oh, well,
It's definitely it was a change. It was for sure. You had gotten used to it. It was another way of stepping away from something that you had come accustomed to, and kind of that it was the impulse to do it. So it was the exact same process walking away from that. And when you leave something like that, that you've devoted so much time to, that you've been so invested in, you do have those same feelings as if you were walking away from drugs or from alcohol. You have that withdrawal almost. And so the way I dealt with that was I would stay busy, try to. I rode out to California not much long after I quit the club and you know, just to visit and visit my girlfriend out there. And, that in itself was a weird experience, because all the other times I had ridden anywhere with a patch on, you have that
affiliation, protection.
Yes, you have that affiliation, and if I'm broke down here, I can call somebody. But when you're out there on your own as a slickback and you're just out there, it's a little intimidating. And so there were some months of actually getting used to being a civilian again.
Right. So, right. Exactly. And I think that part of your story, along with your big company experience, the rehab experience, and now this experience that you're talking about right now, and now you're literally kind of and still doing, like, reinventing yourself, if you will, but you know what I mean, kind of moving forward with some things, you know.
Reinventing myself is a good way to put it, but I'm at the same time, I'm not really reinventing myself. This is who I am.
And yeah, you're allowed to be your— Right. You're
this is who I was before I was in a club, and this is, you know, everything's still the same. I just don't have a patch, and I don't drink,
Yeah, that's true. I don't work for the Federal Bureau of Prisons anymore. I get to be Bruce Cameron now.
Yeah.
Right. And now that is a lot of it anyway, still behind me, but I still take a lot of
it. And club life is very stressful, and a lot of that stress is left. So I'm very happy about that.
Okay. Well, good. And I appreciate you sharing it, because I think those are things, man, that the recovery, the fact that you don't have this agenda of open-minded, understand the coaching, the contract, the basic principles of coaching, and having gone through that experience, you know, just kind of make you more, I don't know, just whatever. Yeah, it's a good thing. Okay.
It is. It's given me some... definitely a range of experience that probably someone just out of college or out, it doesn't have.
Right.
I mean, I'm old. I'm 51 years old. I've experienced a few things.
There you go, man.
I didn't get all this gray from nothing.
There you go. I hear you, man. I'm 10 ahead of you, brother. I'm there. Okay. Well, real good. So we'll shift gears now into friendly waters here. One of the things that we always talk about is and it's okay to say this, you know, what is your preferred client, or what type of client do you think you resonate and work the absolute, like, perfectly best with? And it could be a variety of things, but kind of tell us about that ideal type of client. What are they going through? What are they experiencing?
Well, an ideal client for me, I mean, if you're talking about what's going to make my job easier, or what's going to make coaching easier for me, is someone who is kind of in the same place I was. If we're talking about an addiction kind of coaching, then that would be the best, where I had things on the line. I had to commit to this or else I was going to lose everything. I was close to the bottom, but I hadn't reached. I still had house, family, job, all that stuff, which I think is important for a client I would like to have, someone who still has something they're trying to hold on to, something they're trying to hang on to. If you've reached the bottom and lost everything, I'd still work with you, but it's going to take me a little longer to understand some of that stuff.
Right.
You know, it's easier for me to relate to someone that was kind of in the same boat that I was. So in saying that, someone who's, they could be a professional, they could be just a labor hand somewhere. But like I said, someone who has skin in the game that is not in it just to see if they can get sober. Someone who is committed to doing it and is willing to accept the process and to work the process to get to the goal.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's, I'd love to have all of Hollywood and, you know, stuff like that. But if someone is willing and able to take the coaching and to understand the process and to be committed and to have skin in the game, then that's what I want.
Right.
I don't want somebody who doesn't have skin in the game, that doesn't have anything to lose.
Right. And ironically, I mean, there's, you and I have been in LA at the same time together doing our respective deals. And I'll tell you, actually, we had pizza. Anaheim?
We were in Anaheim, yeah. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it seemed like yesterday. But anyway. But yeah, the other thing is you don't want to get caught in the trap of babysitting, even though your client might be 40 or 50 years old, you know?
No, and that's one of the things I mean by someone who has skin in the game. It's tough to say someone has skin in the game if I got to stand on top of you the whole time.
Well, yeah, and look, there's a client that has cash in the game,
right?
And but they're not working really, and then they expect you to kind of like turn the other way because, hey, I'm renewing these 3 month licks, but at the same time, you got to have that conscience and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, we're really
right, because in all aspects of this, I have to keep my name. I have to keep who I am and who, and you're by doing something like that, by saying, hey, just turn your back, I'm giving you a lot of money. That's screwing with my integrity. And that's all I have at the end of the day is my integrity. And I'm not going to let somebody do that for any amount of money.
So the other, that's temptation A is the babysitting temptation. And then temptation B is, and that won't apply to you at all, but there's coaches early in their career and they'll try to, you know, if they have a nibble on the line, they'll do whatever to get the client, right? Because they need the income as a coach, right? And they'll just do whatever it is to, one, get the client, and then two, hang on to the client. And then all of a sudden it's, I can corrupt things, you know?
Right.
So, you know, those are the pitfalls. Some of the pitfalls always talk about. And man, I mean,
for sure.
When I was at, and you know, you and I both have these Hollywood connections in West Coast, and it is, you know, I guess, you know, once you're out there working with celebrities, you get over it pretty quick. But at first, it was kind of, I was a little bit punch drunk, and then I kind of came to my senses.
Absolutely. When you first start meeting celebrities and things like that, there is a kind of a, you know, you're big eyed and just in a maze. And once you realize that, well, this guy's just the same as me, we grew up almost the same, you know, whatever, that starts to go away real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I just think I would never, there's not an amount of money in the world I want to trade, you know, with this, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they definitely have their own issues for sure.
Because as people, and we're not from that, necessarily, we always have these preconceived notions about certain types of people. And then once you're kind of there, and you see what's behind the veil, it's like, holy cow, man, you know.
Yeah, it's absolute work, work, work to be a celebrity.
Yeah.
I mean, not only are they working all the time, they can't trust anyone either.
Right.
So it's kind of a,
but you know,
double-edged sword.
The thing it is that what I lasted in there until other stuff kind of came on. I'm coming from the prison system. I tell a guy, no, you know, I'd set limits. You know what I mean? When they got testy, I know it's not very coachy sounding right now, but this is more of the sober companion type thing. You know, if they start getting tested, you know, hey, no, we're not doing that. You know what I mean? Like setting good limits and boundaries and being fearless. Like, look, I don't need this. I'm good. You know, I got pension or whatever, private practice. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Well, and in the experience I have, you can let a client set boundaries, and
sure. You
have to make sure that they know the consequences for setting those boundaries and that they establish that. And that's key to, you know, not being a sober companion and being a coach.
Or anybody who's self-destructive in their own unique way. It's like, you know, you can do whatever you want to do.
Right.
As long as you can accept the consequences.
Exactly.
But you can do whatever you want to do, man. You have free will, man. You can do whatever you want. But you got to be able to see that. That's the kicker. But you got to accept the consequences. And, you know, and so.
And that's one of the things with you when we talked earlier about the what kind of client. Mm-hmm. A good client needs to understand that. That there are consequences for their actions. And without that basic comprehension of that, you could run into a lot of problems.
Yeah. Or at least see me or you as an incredible tour guide, or we're going to go on this trail ride and I'm the director of the trail ride through the mountain.
Exactly.
You know? Either you see what I say is credible, right? Or you don't, you know? And so we want, in those moments, and of course, people are going, you know, for the most part, people are going to think you're credible. They wouldn't have engaged in the contract with you,
right?
Now it's on those contracts where the stakeholder is the company, and not necessarily the person, right?
Right.
But or the spouse, or outside family, or whatever, and then you got to kind of work a little harder, you know, to get in there, but. Alrighty, so talk a little bit about the business side of folks and how you've helped, or more executive crowd or business guys that maybe weren't in chemical recovery.
Well, that, you know, my first exposure was as a manager and learning. Taking that training and learning how to apply it to employees. Now, it wasn't to try to get them to do what I wanted them to do.
Right.
I wanted them to accept that whatever project we were working on, they're a stakeholder in it and that they actually have ownership in this. And by me standing over them, governing them, they would not have that kind of buy-in to a project. So in terms of dealing with people on an executive level, I think that's very important to push that out there to let them know you're the stakeholder here. You are the one, you know, you are the one who has ownership of this. I'm going to guide you, take you on this trip, but you ultimately have to be the one to make these decisions, to take this path, to follow. And doing that at the company that I've worked for all these years, it's a very good model to go with, to coach people through adversity and you know, get them to the goal of them triumphing,
right?
Not me. you know, get them to, you know, watch them go through that path that they're going through and getting to the finish line. And that's, that applies to executive, that applies to just standard business. And that also applies to, any type of, chemical or addiction or, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess you could apply it to sports and, you know, anything really.
Yeah. I mean, people, you know, and we are our own worst enemy. People, we all have blocks and we all have things that get in the way possibly of our peak performance or being the best version of ourselves or whatever you want to call it. But, you know,
right.
And helping people navigate that negative self-talk or negative, some of the negative psychology that prevents them from living a more fulfilled life.
For sure.
And some of that, and for the things that they bring on themselves, those are easier to address. You know, you can't really address the Palisades fire because that is what is horrible, right? I mean, that's anyway, you know, those fires, but that's an external tragedy that the person will have to cope with, but it's not like, you know, so it's a whole different thing between internal and external things that bring people down. So, but anyway, that's real good. So I assume you're taking new clients.
Yes, I am taking new clients at this time, for sure.
And we'll in a few minutes, you know, just be ready to roll out either your email, your Instagram, or whatever touch points people have to be able to get a hold of you. So if anybody's interested in getting to know you better or coaching with you, they can access your services. So
sure.
Another question I have is that we've talked a lot about, but are there other things that differentiate you from other coaches? And I know that sounds like that sounds bad. I mean, I kind of feel like, well, you know, my federal experience and working in penitentiaries and yada, 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 right? And having that, so I can kind of capsule, you know, my experiences and then the umpteen years now, 30 plus years, you know, in the space. But what are some other things that, I guess, because there is this kind of generic archetype of life coach, executive coach, sober coach, right?
Right. So,
what are some of your signature things beyond what we've already said, which was plenty, but
I don't know. I think I'm more realistic than a lot of coaches. I see a lot of coaches out there push like PMA all the time, you know, and man, that's just not life. Life is not positive all the time. You could come at it that way as much as you want to, but you're still going to get beat down. And it's how you deal with those beat downs that makes you either win or fail. So I don't push that. I believe in PMA personally. I try to be positive, but there are days.
Tell folks what PMA is.
Positive mental attitude.
That's it. Yep. Okay.
And you know, a lot of it goes with you put that out, you get it back, you know, things like that. But there are days you're going to see me and I do not have a positive mental attitude for sure. And because that's life. And I'm not going to project that. I'm not going to put that out there that, oh yeah, it's PMA all the time or you know, always smiling. No, that just isn't the way life is. Yeah. I'm going to be real and I'm going to be truthful and I'm going to tell you exactly the way things are and exactly how
I love that because, you know, part of my coaching, I would kind of tell these guys, hey, look, life is basically neutral because there's good days and then there's bad days.
Absolutely.
But in the middle, you know, and then I have this kind of a cheesy, you know, my bills are paid, I woke up today. God let me wake up today. Got my fingers and toes, whatever. Have a roof over my head. Do a little gratitude stuff. Like, yeah, that's pretty good. You know what I mean? But it's not like, yeah, it's, I think that if we focus too much on that.
Well, I think a lot of the PMA and the stuff like that, and I think that focuses, it takes your focus away from what's happening right now a lot of the time.
Right.
And I always repeat this. I heard it in rehab, and it's the only place I heard it was in rehab, was if you keep a foot in tomorrow and a foot in yesterday, you're just pissing on today. So I like to keep that, you know, focus on what's happening right now. And I know sometimes I'll have that foot in the past and in the future. I've got to remember on what's going on today, and I got to let that shit go and just concentrate on what's happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's called mindfulness. Being
okay.
Aware of the moment. How about
yes.
that? Sounds good
yes.
to me. All right, man. Awesome. Well, go ahead and tell our viewers and listeners how they can get a hold of you, Brent. What's the touch points?
The best way to get a hold of me right now is either by email, and it is thesalvagedshow@gmail.com. Or I have there's an Instagram, The Salvage Show, and you could get on there and you could DM me, whatever you want to do.
Awesome.
And I should have a link up to this here pretty soon. So
yes, and you'll be getting a link here by the end of the day. Watch your Facebook direct message, stuff like that. We'll get everything square. So, well, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity, and let me just ramble on and babble.
No, dude, no. this is what it's about, man. It was a good conversation. You know,
it's the first time I've ever done anything like live like this. Like, so.
Well, it's live, and then it's going to be saved into podcast form forever. So, but yeah, man, it's a little mix of both. That's why we like LA Talk Radio, because it still has some of the old school live features, and the YouTube channel and all kinds of plus and all the other stuff. We're and that's a good segue to, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Amazon Audible, we're on iHeartMedia and a couple of other podcast aggregators. So we encourage everybody to, or you can go to LA Talk Radio and find the show under the Concierge Coaches Show. All our shows and show summaries are available for download. The MP3, the MP4, everything. So we encourage people to go to our past shows. All right, then. So what else? Oh, yes. I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. We have a Facebook group, the Concierge Coaches Show. It's a Facebook page, and we have shows on the Facebook page. And hopefully Wayne will be with us here next week. He was out this week, so, and we'll go from there. So, man, well, have a great week, Brent. Thanks for coming on the show.
You too, Bruce, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, man, and we'll be in touch. And we'll see everybody here next time for another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody. Be safe.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.